There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Phone numbers and text line have not changed. But if you're new to the show, welcome, first of all. Glad you're here. 343-0106, 343-0106 for a call or a text. And with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can even leave us a talkback message. You see a microphone, that microphone on the front page. It's like not a real microphone, icon. You press it, lets you record the message, emails it to the show, and we can play it back here on the air. And actually, as we get into this next discussion here, our next guest reminds me to remind y'all we're less than a week away from our event at the Convention Center with the Mobile Mayoral Hopefuls. All four of them will be there. This will be from noon to 2 on Thursday. We're down at the Convention Center. It's the Business Expo put on by the Chamber of Commerce. But while that's going on, yeah, we're usually there doing this show anyway. Heck, why don't we have all the mayoral candidates in? So they're going to be there, and I continue to solicit y'all. Probably through Monday, I'll shut it off. Questions you have if you're citizens of Mobile, email. I know the text line is super popular, but for that reason, stuff gets lost on there. So email Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com with your questions for the mayoral candidates. Please be a citizen of Mobile to put that in, but email and put like Mobile Mayoral or something to the effect in the subject line so I can kind of see it more easily when it comes through the email stack, and I will get those into the mix as we ask the questions coming up on Thursday. All right, speaking of municipal elections, it's time to talk more municipal elections at a council level and a discussion of somebody who wants a job for district. This be District 4, right, Bill? Correct. And Bill Appling, our guest, District 4, which is, I know I'm not asking you to say it's this street and this street, but like what part of town?
So you're basically looking at the Cottage Hill and Government Street corridors.
Okay.
Down all the way to Bellingraph Road, but then also out west all the way to South Cody Road.
Yeah, some of these, you know, when the annexation went through and the chain, like, there's district's got some range on them now.
It's, I think, the largest landmass on district that I believe.
I think you're right.
Second largest population, but I think it's the largest landmass.
Yeah, well, when you can, we could get whatever they're doing over in 6 to get some of their people. They got everybody, so we get them out of the mix and then get everything balanced back out. But yeah, thanks for coming in. And I, you know, I ask you this question, and seriously, I mean, some people say, why are you doing this? But I wonder, why are you doing this? Why are you, I mean, you have a, I mean, served, you law enforcement, you served, you know, the people. Is this a natural progression? Is this something, like, as a kid, you go, I always want to be a city councilman? Bill, why?
You know, I think it's a little of both.
Okay.
You know, I don't know that I would have ever gotten to this point in my life where I would be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Where I started from, it wasn't, I didn't start from a lot. People think I did, but I didn't. And, It's been a slow progression to this point, but it's something that I've really had in the back of my head that I really wanted to do, and I feel like, you know, I could do more for District 4.
Okay, so in doing that, let's talk, I mean, first of all, with your experience, let's go public safety first, and then we, because everybody goes, but we'll do that, and then there's a lot more to talk about, but public safety-wise, your thoughts?
Public safety is a huge issue. You know, the perception of safety is also an issue, and you can have a crime occur at the mall, and everyone in town's scared, and you have to figure a way to make people feel safe in their own home, and to do that, you really have to be in their neighborhood. You have to be in that area, and you have to reassure them that it's safe for them to do stuff, for them to go outside, for them to go shop. And, you know, a lot of people on the south area and the eastern areas of our district, they go to Tillman's Corner to shop.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them are scared to go to Tillman's Corner to shop and will drive to Schillinger's Road before they shop.
Okay. That, I mean, and that's real. I think that's real.
Absolutely real.
You talk about the perception of it, because this has come up in a lot of discussions of, and you probably know the terms better than I do with your history in law enforcement, but community policing versus targeted or something.
There's a lot of different methods that have been done, but I think that the most effective method is to actually get out and be seen in the community and to actually make the changes in the community that need to be made. You don't want to see people wandering the street mm-hmm. in the middle of the day or at 2 a.m. for nefarious reasons, for things like prostitution or drug use, that you see it openly in the daytime. And it's unfortunate the homeless population has grown so great, especially in the Highway 90 area, yeah. the Tillman's Corner area, that we don't have enough resources dedicated to getting that. I don't know that we'll ever abate it, mm-hmm. but to get it to where we service people that we have come in contact with in the proper way to make sure that they have the care and the needs that their needs are met. I mean, we can't just, you know, bring them from our city to another city like some yeah. local cities have done to us.
Y'all listen to Mississippi?
No comments.
Yeah.
But we've got a program. The city has a program that has started. It needs more people in that program. And I think that once we get a hold of it and wrangle together what's going on and get it abated down and get the word out, you know, even in the homeless community, they have ways to communicate with each other. And they're like, well, we found this place that's great. I mean, it's the same way you would talk to your buddies if you found a great fishing hole.
Mm-hmm.
And every, you know, you don't normally tell everybody about
right.
that, but you might tell your best friend
yeah.
and he might tell his best, you know, and so it goes on. And so we have to make it where that we're not the target of everyone to come to.
Yeah.
That they communicate. If you come here, they're going to find either medical care for you. If you do something wrong, you're going to go to jail. You got to
make it not the place to be.
Yeah, we have to make it not the place to be.
You know, and I think about that, too, from going to another sector, the businesses in District 4, too. I mean, you just said that people are choosing not to shop at a place.
That's right.
Because of that.
That's right.
And if I'm a business owner, I'm in your ear
yeah,
on that.
The difficulty that business owners have with homeless, I know. I personally experienced mm-hmm. as a small business owner, yeah. as someone that's been downtown my entire life, really, I've experienced that for years. But mm-hmm. it has become abated downtown and much more manageable. However, there is recently an increase, but it's nothing like it is on Highway 90.
Unless people are in that area, they don't. I mean, I know it because it's weekly. Somebody's mm-hmm. talking about it on their text line, but. That area there, people think, oh, the homeless will be downtown or right here by our studios at Airport right. 65. But that area there, it is every week somebody's texting me about it.
There, you know, I notice, I try to follow different things online and try to keep up with what people are saying, because even though you encounter people during the day, they might not tell you everything that's on their mind.
Sure.
And so sometimes I'll find where, you know, I had someone that exclaimed that there are homeless people at Cottage Hill and Hillcrest.
Mm-hmm.
At the corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. Like mm-hmm. it should have never happened. It wouldn't have never happened. But it's a high priority trafficked area.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make sure that we deal with people that come into those high traffic areas and look to panhandle, which my understanding is that has been allowed
mm-hmm.
By court ruling.
Yeah, so, well, that's a tougher one. I've often argued if you're going to say you can't panhandle, then the kids can't raise money for the T-ball team, and like where right.
the firefighters can't.
Yeah, firefighters can't. Right. I mean, that's a tough thing about that. People are like, well, they ought to stop them. I'm like, well, you want to stop everybody from their right? Yeah, it's a tough one.
It is. The whole thing with homeless is a difficult situation because we have a lot of veterans that are homeless.
The people with the city that did it, and I've had them on. They're working on it. We talk about the different different groups. There's the people that are. Just on the edge of getting them back into You know, like they just need to die. And there's, to the other extreme, people who never want to be housed again.
Right.
So there's, but the in-between is probably where the real work comes.
And you know, I've worked with Love All Pantry.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working with them for, well, 5 years now, since COVID started. And they service a homeless population that comes, they'll mostly walk up, and they come and they get food and take it wherever it is that they're habitating. And, you know, sometimes they have a place, it's maybe abandoned, sometimes they're in the woods. I mean,
isn't that kind of blended with, like, the blight issue, too? If there's a structure that's blighted, sometimes that's a place for...
Again, you give them the opportunity, they will take the opportunity. And if we abate blight, even if we have to seal up a residence that we can't do anything with because mm-hmm. we're trying to figure out who owns it. Maybe there's 16 heirs to this one property.
Right.
So you've got to get a deed on it to do something with it. And you could spend a couple of years negotiating through that.
But in the meantime.
In the meantime, seal that house up.
This also talking.
If it's unsafe, then it needs to be on the ground.
Right. And that's the thing that you know, I know that at a council level is important to the people in that district also, but as a city, there seems to be, I mean, that discussion is there.
It's a lot of it.
You know,
I mean, we have, like, the Crest Motel is a prime example on Highway 90.
Okay, and it's...
And it's a mess. It's chain link fenced up. People are still getting in it. It is boarded up. It has not been re-boarded up.
And people are getting in there.
And people are getting in it.
What about on the flip side of this? That's the abandoned, but what about growth? What about new business, all that? How do you encourage that in District 4?
Well, you know, we've got a excellent highway system. We're the end of 65, and we're near the end of 10, but we have a ton with rail, with shipping, especially container yards are exploding. And we have properties that have sat vacant for decades that are finally getting attention. You know, they're using them either for lots to store stuff where there's to store in those containers, or they're drop yards or whatever. And we have those potentials of growth. And with that comes the ancillary businesses, small restaurants, mm-hmm. you know, local restaurants, small shops, places people want to do things.
So you expect that growth to pick up?
Yeah, not just from, you know, the shipping industry, but, yeah, from our industries that we're getting in. You know, Airbus is going to expand. They're still working on the Brookley Field complex and using some of that area across the highway for more industrialization, which has changed the dynamic of that neighborhood severely. And I, you know, some people are for it and some people are not for it. So it's kind of, but it's coming. I mean, I don't know how we would be able to abate that because it's going to happen.
So in that, obviously, if you're campaigning, you're communicating with people in District 4.
Yeah.
What about that? What about the communication interchange? If you were elected, how do you see that?
We have got to pay attention to our historic neighborhoods, our neighborhoods, not historic as in age, but neighborhoods that have been in place for years, mm-hmm. for decades, that are getting bypassed and stepped on by development.
Now, how is that, like, meaning what?
So you have this issue with this road down on a range line where the Walmart
mm-hmm.
Warehouse is going. Initially, it was one stop sign, and the stop sign was for everyone that lived in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So all the construction equipment and all the construction folks had free rein to go back and forth all day, and it took people forever to get out.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It's now changed to a four-way stop. I don't know that it's any better, but it at least allows the neighborhood to get out.
Right.
You know, share that road. But I went down there the other day and watched it, and you had trucks that were pulling in, backing up, making circles and backing in. I don't know why they were doing that, whatever it was that they were working on at the time, truckloads full of rocks and dirt and whatever. And it's we've
the neighborhood was there first.
The neighborhood was there first.
Yeah.
I mean, that neighborhood's been down there since probably, I don't know, the 50s, mm-hmm. I would guess, at least. And we've got to pay attention to that, to our people that are already there when we have someone coming in. And it's not like that Walmart was brand new and someone just called and said, hey, we're going to put in this Walmart warehouse next week.
Right.
The city's had to have known about it.
So if elected, you would work to abate that?
Again, we need to be ahead of the curve when we're getting growth. We need to be able to have the infrastructure in place for that growth to come there. If it's a place where the growth, where that growth and the infrastructure don't match, maybe we should have a conversation with, hey, this might not be the best place for you to do this, but maybe over here across the highway is where you don't have a residential neighborhood that you're going to be running amok while you're trying to build your building.
Yeah, well, that's some forward thinking. And which is a good thing. People want to find out more about your campaign, what you're doing. Where do you go online? Get a place
online. Vote Appling. That's VOTEAPPLING.
All right. .com. Very good, Bill. Good
yes,
to see you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 125, FM Talk 106.5 on this Friday. Time to check in with my buddy Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. We can always talk precious metals, but let's talk about when they take the precious metals and make them into shiny things that ladies like. How are y'all looking in your inventory on jewelry?
We have a lot of different things. We have engagement rings, be it diamonds, or if you want to go with something different, like a simulant diamond or something like that, we can take care of that. There's different gemstones, different estate pieces, vintage things, all kinds of things that I can't even describe.
We have said before, though, y'all, it's serious. When you go in there and you find a piece of jewelry that your lady likes, then like the algorithm here, who is also a human being, Anna, remembers that and goes, okay, well, if she liked that, then look at these for the next gift giving idea. You know, like you've done that. You're like, okay, if that worked, then I got some more things like this. And that's a real nice service.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I actually got a compliment this week about how much I know off the top of my head what's in the inventory when it comes to jewelry. I don't know about coins and paper money, but jewelry I know.
That's why you're the pro there. So when y'all are looking for jewelry, believe me, do what I've done in the past, and you start that process, and then Anna remembers, like, okay, last time you got a such and such. Hey, have you looked at this and that? You know, it's really good. It's a great service. And people need to start getting you on their side when it comes to gift giving. So tell people how to find you, come visit with you, and talk some jewelry.
Yes, we're at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. You can find us on Facebook. You can visit our website at mobilebaycoins.com. You can also call me. Our phone number is 251-725-1590.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
All right. There goes Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Let me try to run through some text real quickly here. Trace, I got a question about Big Creek Lake. That strip of land between Tanner Williams and the water, that belongs to the state, correct? If you're talking about the strip, like, you're on the dam there. Are you talking about when you're on the dam? Tanner Williams on the dam? Like, is that the strip? Like, if you're heading westbound across the dam, the stuff on your right shoulder there? I mean, that would just be part of the roadway, I guess. I mean, I don't know how much where the roadway ends. I don't think it's far off the roadway where the roadway ends. I think we talked about it before. So I guess that part of the dam belongs to Moss. I don't know that for sure, Trey. So it might be somebody who knows. I can pull up some of my mapping apps and stuff, maybe during a break here and check it out. Let's see. Supermom said, what I gather on TikTok for the outrage of shutting down Big Creek, I gotta get it on TikTok, I guess. That's where everything's happening, right? Is that taxpayer funds were used in operating and upkeep of Big Creek Lake. Doesn't seem fair the public can no longer access Big Creek. Yeah, well, I mean, I guess anybody, taxpayers or people pay their water bill and all that. I don't know. I mean, can we make, I'm trying to think of that, and I hear what you're saying, but can we make the argument that taxpayer dollars pay for nuclear missile silos, but we can't go in the nuclear missile silo? I'm just trying to play devil's advocate for a second. That because you use taxpayer funds, we should have access to it. I kind of follow the spirit, but I wonder if there's not an argument the other way. Brian says it's not Walmart, it's Amazon. And yes, my neighborhood is upset about the change. Yeah, not being able to get out in traffic, that's a pain for sure. And Michael says, stuff like the Wave and Maritime Museum losing a ton of money every year stinks, and I would like to see it shut down, but I'd also would rather the city pay the Wave expenses than that of stupid Amtrak for people to go spend money in New Orleans or at the boats, because money for Mobilians, and it's not a dumb train union. News coming up next.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5. On the text line here, Supermom says, if you get on TikTok, get your algorithm set stat, otherwise you won't like it. Well, see, that's just another job. You call some places, at the end of this call, will you take a quick survey? I mean, it's nothing against the people, but I got other stuff I got to do. I've been on the phone for 40 minutes with Delta or whatever. I know I don't want to take a survey. They're a nice person who was working with me. Can't I just figure out the algorithm for me? Oh, and also on the, just heard Barry Moore there, but on the congressional side too, I don't think it's a super big secret, but it's popped up at Lanyap and WPMI and other places that Jerry Carl, former rep, Jerry Carl filed a statement of organization for Jerry Carl for Congress, according to federal campaign filings. According to data, Carl has $63,905 in his campaign fund. This is coming, y'all. We'll delve into this for a second. It says, widely believed that Barry Moore will announce a run for U.S. Senate and a seat being vacated by Tommy Tuberville, with Moore teasing a big announcement for Friday, August 15th. So that's coming up a week from today. Remember, like, back in June when I told y'all, well, there's an announcement coming? He kept pushing it off, but it was supposed to happen in June. And I don't know all the things behind the scenes, but it's been pushed till now. I'd be real surprised if the announcement on Friday was not that he's running for Senate, because he is. And then, of course, I've been saying this summer, then other dominoes will fall. And one of them is what they're talking about here, is that I imagine Jerry Carl will run for the AL1 seat again. It says in the story here, Carl lost to Moore in the 2024 election when the new Alabama congressional lines created a district that included both Carl's and Moore's homes. Federal law requires a representative to live in the district they are elected to represent. Carl also posted a major announcement teaser over on Twitter Wednesday. We talked about that it was coming, a major announcement coming soon. So I'd figure if you just want to see a timeline, Barry Moore will have a big announcement, and then Congressman Carl will have a big announcement. It'll be all big announcements all the way down. So we'll have that coming up soon, and then the whole other discussion at the same time, from what Supreme Court, remember we talked about it, I guess, the beginning of the week, what the Supreme Court had told Louisiana in their case, redistricting case, to kind of look at questions about the Voting Rights Act and all that. May the districts be redrawn again? I mean, it won't happen in this cycle, but it may be in another two cycles, or maybe another one cycle after this one. Yeah, maybe it won't happen in this congressional cycle, but in the next, possibly they'll go back to the drawing board and redraw AL1 and AL2. I would hope back to how they used to be, or pretty darn close to it. It's just this splitting of our district. I can make an argument if I want to and say, well, you know, it's good because you have two members of Congress looking after you. But in reality, you have too distant. It's too distant when you're up in the Wiregrass. Like, I don't feel like somebody from here is really tuned in as much for what the Wiregrass needs, and I don't think somebody from up in the Wiregrass is tuned into what we need down here. So, just look at, you know, those announcements are out. Don't. I guess act surprised. So there'll be. I'll say this also here, that there's movement from Barry Moore's wife, Heather, to run for AL1. How would you feel about that, having a couple where one's a senator and one's a member of the House? She's like a lot of power in one place, but we'll see. We'll see what happens in the announcements. Good. Oh, and he's on with us. Good. It's our buddy C.B. Carl, who is joining us, and always likes to just talk to C.B. Carl about lots of different issues out here, but he reminded me earlier this week, it is the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. Am I correct?
You are correct, sir.
80
How
years.
How are you, boss man?
I'm good. Shut up. And got your boss. So you remind me of that, and that is that's something that didn't get a lot of, and I guess it didn't get a lot of attention for a couple of reasons. 80 years ago, but it's also it ended the war, but it was a very tough decision. I mean, it's, you know, what had to be done, but it's tough to celebrate that the same way we maybe celebrate other military victories for the United States.
I wouldn't call it a celebration. I really wouldn't. I would, but it needs to be remembered because of what everything that went in with it. I mean, you know, I emailed you about, I was part of the air detachment in my battalion when we were deployed to Guam. We did a combat training exercise on Tinian, where the Enola Gay and the boxcar were loaded up. And I met some of the people. The thing that got me fired up about it is that not just the fact that very little was said about it, was the fact that it so victimized the Japanese. And I met some of the guys that were, you know, I looked up some other stuff about it, and they talk about the mass civilian suicides, like in Saipan. I don't know, you know, a little geography lesson for everybody. Tinian, you can look out from Tinian and see Saipan, kind of like looking across the bay and from the eastern shore to Mobile.
Okay,
is that close?
Okay,
yeah. And Tinian's about the size of about Manhattan or so.
Okay,
not very big. Well, people have heard of the Indianapolis, where all those guys got eaten by the sharks.
Yes.
And they filmed it over here in Mobile. Well, those guys were delivering Little Boy to Tinian, and that's why they got eaten by the sharks, because nobody knew where they were, because it was a secret.
I'll be darned.
But anyway, I was a young punk in Tinian, and we were the first ones to be there since the my air detachment. I think I told you the story about me coming off the back of C-130 with an M-60 machine gun, full mm-hmm. combat gear, mm-hmm. running with a pallet of Budweiser.
Yes, I do. I do remember that.
Yeah. Well, we were the first big military there since the place was abandoned after World War II. But at the time, I think I texted you about it when y'all were talking about the road projects over in Mobile. After we liberated Tinian in August of 45, they brought in the Seabees, and within a couple months, they had the world's largest, at the time, airfield built. Six runways for B-29s, and the complements of the side stuff and everything, you know, the taxiways. I'm a Seabee. I build things. I don't fly things. But anyway... But anyhow, I the thing that affected me most there was talking to people that were there, and they call them mass suicides, but I've been to those places, and they call them, for some reason, Lover's Leaps. And on all those islands, I've been to Tinian, I've been to Guam, I've been to Palau, all the islands that the Japanese had, those places have cliffs. And they would march civilians off those cliffs at gunpoint if they didn't want to help the Japanese.
Well, okay, this was before the bomb drop.
Right.
Those people that I
met when I was there, because I always try to meet people wherever I went. That was part of being stuck in the places the Seabees put me in, is getting to know the area. Those guys told their story their way, and they were very victimized. And about my time at Tinian, I was assigned a detail to go out. Reagan wanted to reactivate those runways. And
didn't you say that you went to this biggest the airfield you just talked about, the biggest one in the world at the point it was built, and it would be like covered by the jungle?
Yep. Yeah, they cleared one runway for us to land. It was like I told Laura, I said it must have been something like the Blue Angels to those people, because they were out there behind the fences. And I met a guy in Foley that remembered us landing. But we were coming in the C-130s, taxiing through, dropping off us. And the C-130s were taking off, heading back to Guam, loading up again. And the Marines were out there harassing us like Marines do, you know, tear gas and all that BS. But that's what Marines do, is harass Phoebe, because they ain't got a job.
Well, they all they know how to break stuff, right?
Yeah.
Y'all build it and they break it.
Anyway, but they didn't want to, they knew where the bomb pits were approximately. The bomb pits that loaded up the, because they had to put the bombs in a pit and drive the, because of the size of them, and then taxi the B-29s over them and load them up into them.
Is that how they got them loaded?
Yeah. And
really?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they and there's two bomb pits, and they sent us punks. You know, I was in my early 20s, and they sent us out there to find them and flag them, so when the heavy equipment was going through, they wouldn't damage them.
So you were not only standing on the airfield, you were standing in the bomb pit where the bombs were loaded.
We found them. We were out there poking around and and hacking the jungle, and then we found them. And, you know, we were all out there, you know, pissing and moaning, excuse my French, and, you know, being non-rates and non-commissioned officers. And it was jungle guan, I mean, of Tinian. Well, when we found those things, they were full of wildflowers. And they had the forethought to put the bomb, put a plaque on them when they, but when we pulled the jungle off of them, you could have heard a pin drop. And all of us were like, wow, this is the place.
It's got to be, eerie is not even the right word for it. To just stand there and know that's where the bombs were loading into the bellies of the plane.
Yep. Yeah. Now they've got like shrines built over them because World War II tourism is something else. But anyway, that was awesome. And, you know, the fight on Tinian, you know, and by the way, my other point, my buddy, Mr. Welton, that I don't know if you remember, I got all of y'all guys to send him birthday cards for his 100th birthday. He was the old breed from Guadalcanal. Right now, 83 years ago, he was in Guadalcanal. They landed yesterday in 1942. And he was something else. He met some of the first CBs, and we got to be really good friends. He was like my own personal EB sledge, telling me stories and stuff. And that he said that day when they dropped that bomb, and I know it was a horrible thing, and war is a horrible thing, that he had been to Guadalcanal, Peleliu, and New Britain.
Wow!
And him and his
deadliest of the Pacific fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, and man, he was a glass blower, bead maker. He was he played Santa Claus like I do sometimes, and he was the jolliest little old man that had seen some of the most horrible things everybody ever saw. But you know, he was him and a lot of his experienced Marines were taken back from the front areas. They were training to assault Japan.
Yeah, I mean the whole story and the amount of loss of life, not just for us, which is most important to me, but even for the Japanese and the citizens there in Japan, they made the right decision, but my God, the heart, what that must have felt like.
Armed, and they were fighting for the emperor, which their god.
Yeah,
but Mr. Wilton said he told me he always had a funny thing about everything and sense of humor, but he said, Carl, aside from the birth of my children, I'm thinking that's probably the best day of my life.
Because he got to go home.
Because, well, he knew that they, and like Laura always says, but Mr. Welton, it took two.
Yeah.
Because on the 9th, they loaded up Fat Man on a boxcar.
Yeah, we should all remember that. We should all remember that, too, in this, you know, solemn anniversary, that it took two. After dropping one nuclear bomb, they're like, we're not done yet. Wow.
Right. And we were dropping incendiary bombs in between the whole. I mean, if you really get, I got after being there on Tinian and seeing Guam and seeing Palau and seeing and talking to people that had family that were actually there, I got a little bit of passion about it.
Yeah.
And after knowing Mr. Welton, I got a little more passion about it. And people need to remember it, but not celebrate it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It was for a reason to save lives, but it was also such a horrible thing to have to do.
Right, right. We weren't the bad guys.
Nope.
We were just the baddest guys.
I like that. We'll have to use that. Well, thank you for the recollections of that. And
thank you for the time, brother.
Man, it's something. And to think about those things 80 years ago today that are part of why we're sitting here like we are as Americans today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, CB Carl. All right, brother. Bye.
All right, there goes CB Carl. Coming right back to wrap it up here on a Friday. It's heavy. It's heavy on a Friday, but remember history. I wish more people did.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 154 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Heads up tomorrow, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward and myself, our guest from Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, wildlife biologist Richard Tharp. We're talking about gator season. Gets started on this coming Thursday, the first of the three different weekends. There's a weekend. It's a Thursday through Sunday thing. A couple in August and one in September, but we'll break that down. Any kind of questions on that, we'll check us out tomorrow morning starting at 7. All right, let's go to the text line here. My gosh, I could go, Otto, I hope someone's planning to survey the people that arrive in Mobile on the Amtrak train to find out how many are coming to visit compared to how many people are just coming home. I think I think it's going to be unbalanced, but maybe there's something I don't see, but I think it's going to be way more westward, us going over there than them coming over here, but we can see. Michael said Moore's going to announce he's running for Senate, his wife running for AL1 House. Yeah, it's funny how they go, big, Michael, like, big secret coming. We're going to have a big announcement. Like, back in June, we knew this. Like, what? I don't know. Let's see. This from unnamed texter. Give yourself a nickname here or something on the text line. It helps me to bond with you. Unnamed texter said it saved a lot of American GI lives. It did indeed. It did indeed. My buddy Maximus said, hey, the bombs in Japan saved 1 million U.S. soldiers from dying in a land war. I agree. All those things I agree with. But it still doesn't take away from the somberness of it, right? I mean, it's what had to happen for that. Like, I'm an American, so what saves Americans, I'm for. But you got to think how heavy that decision had to be. You know, it just... Knowing that that many people, I mean, and we had to drop a second. That's how much, you talk about Tar Heels, forget the Carolina boys. Japanese boys had a lot of tar on their heels and a sword at their back from the emperor, but they weren't going to, so you have to drop a second nuclear weapon. Wow. And to sit there and hear C.B. Carl standing there, in the cutouts, in the, you know, you can picture this, like the pits where the bombs would be loaded up into the bombers. Chris in Orange Beach, celebrating C.B. Carl as well, said grandfather was a brigadier general, was stationed at Benning until 778. He transferred to Germany for the last 15 years. I have heard the stories out of his mouth. You're a damn good man for letting him talk and remember what he contributed. Contribute my daft hat to you, sir. Well, I mean, we got, Jim says, great discussion with C.B. Carl. Yeah, we love C.B. Carl. He's seen a lot of things, but yeah, he reminder that, like, we can all breeze past these things. So 80 years ago, but that was a huge change on planet. It's stuff we're talking about now, right? Iran and a nuclear weapon. Will Putin use a nuke? What rogue state might have it? That was, this whole conversation started 80 years ago, you'd say preceding it, some with the Manhattan Project and all that, but with the use of it 80 years ago. And I'm all on board on doing what it took to save, like Maxima says, 1 billion U.S. lives. in a land war there. And so, and you know, the number of Japanese civilians that would have been killed in the land war would have been atrocious as well. But you can't see that without having just a second and a somber moment for what that meant. So I appreciate it, C.B. Carl. Thank you for reminding us of what happened 80 years ago. All right, Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. They probably won't remember it on that show, but they got other stuff to talk about, their own drama. So we'll let them rip coming up next.